Does taking your younger kids into Sunday morning service feel like a losing battle? Would you like to see your older children take the initiative to help around the house? Do you have a shy child who struggles to say hello or even acknowledge others? If you'd like encouragement and help navigating any of these issues, then we're so glad you're joining us for today's episode of Ask Ginger. I'm your host, Katie Morgan, and welcome to Parenting with Ginger Hubbard. Ginger is the best-selling author of Don't Make Me Count to Three, Wise Words for Moms, and I Can't Believe You Just Said That. She speaks at women's events, parenting conferences, and homeschool conventions across the country. You can check out her parenting resources and find out when she's speaking in or near your area at gingerhubbard.com. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to help support our ministry, one way you can do that is by purchasing Ginger's resources directly from her website instead of other online retailers. Looking for gift ideas for Easter? Well, stay tuned until the end of this episode to receive a discount code on all three of Ginger's children's books at gingerhubbard.com. Thank you for your support, listeners. This enables us to further our mission, to help parents reach the hearts of their children for the glory of God. Do your kids just love getting mail? Do you go to the mailbox with them and sift through the mountain of paper, like coupon for mold removal? Yeah, don't need that, hopefully. Electric bill, ouch. Bathing suit magazine you didn't request, no thank you. But what if your kids went to the mailbox with you to find an engaging current events magazine just for them, presented from a biblical worldview? God's World News is just that, and so much more. They offer bi-monthly print magazines and corresponding online content that will walk your kids through current events in age-appropriate ways, from toddlers all the way to teens. Subscribe at gwnews.com/ginger. Again, that's gwnews.com/ginger. Well, Ginger, it is such a blessing to hear how our podcast is impacting the lives of our listeners. Mrs. Custer says this, "I just listened to the December 26th Heart-Oriented Parenting episode right after telling my husband we need to brush up and listen to Katie and Ginger again. This episode is full of golden nuggets to get my godly parenting brain oriented to work more efficiently. It's so often we forget the things to say and not say because our natural impulses are unfortunately not as patient as Christ. Even after reading all the books, I sometimes remember only bits and pieces in the moment. I finish the dishes and feel refreshed for my kids to serve and point them well after listening." I love that comment. That was so great. Mm-hmm. And Leah messaged on Instagram to say this, "Thank you so much for your biblical wisdom on parenthood. Your podcast has provided so many reminders on how to be a mother that is honoring to the Lord." And we also want to thank Deidre Howell from Ohio and Charles Birchwood from Florida for their generous donations and support of the podcast over this past year. Well, hey, Ginger, I love it when we get to answer listener questions, and I'm excited we're back with another Ask Ginger episode. So let's jump right in with our first question. It comes from Natalie in Washington State, and here's what she says. "Hello, Ginger and Katie. Thank you so much for this podcast. It has been a huge encouragement to me in my motherhood journey. My question is about children attending regular worship service. My church has children's Sunday school before church, and during church, families are encouraged to worship together. I love the idea of worshiping alongside our children, but while they are little, ages 2, 4, and 4, it feels more like a losing battle all around. My husband and I don't get to listen to the sermon when we are constantly attending to them, and they are too little to understand most of what is being said in the pulpit. I've heard people argue that it's good for children to learn to sit still and listen in church, but I wonder if what we are really teaching them is how to tune out the pastor and keep busy until the service is over. It pains me to hear my 4-year-old moan during church, 'Is it over yet?' I want my kids to love church and love Sundays. Any advice for how to cultivate a love for church would be appreciated."
Well, hi, Natalie. I completely understand your concern and frustration, and I think I do have a few suggestions that might be helpful for you. First, don't expect too much too soon. You are 100% correct when you say that children that young are just not able to understand most of what's being said from the pulpit, which makes it very difficult for them to pay attention for long periods of time. We shouldn't expect their comprehension skills to be more advanced than they actually are. We also have to consider that their self-control skills are still being developed as well. Even as an adult, if I had to sit still for an hour and listen to a presentation where I only understood a small fraction of what was being said, I think I would probably look like a four-year-old. I would wind up distracted, fidgety, or asleep. Just ask my ninth grade algebra teacher. But just because they aren't capable of understanding all of the sermon, that doesn't mean that they aren't capable of understanding some of it, which brings me to my second suggestion. Encourage them to listen and think about what they are able to comprehend, even if it's just one sentence, even if it's just a few words. One way to do that is by having them draw or color a picture of something the pastor says, and then let them tell you about it after church, maybe when you're driving home or over lunch. That helps them to concentrate on at least some of the pastor's message. We had some pretty interesting conversations on the way home from what they actually heard in some of the sermons. Some of them were pretty humorous. But it does. It just helps them to pay a little bit of attention and focus on at least some aspect of what's being said on Sundays. And so if you make this a practice every Sunday, it just provides opportunities for young children to learn about God's Word and opens up spiritual conversations that are in accordance with their age. My third tip is to consider having them practice sitting and listening at home. A great way to do that is by reading to them often and having short conversations about the stories that you're reading. You might also consider setting aside some time each day where they sit and listen to age-appropriate audiobooks. I know Katie's kids do that. They were here a couple of weeks ago, and when Katie and I were talking about things that were they were bored stiff with, they went in their rooms and listened to audiobooks, and they loved that. And so when they're listening to those audiobooks, if they tend to be fidgety, maybe giving them something to do with their hands, like coloring or drawing, can be helpful while they're listening. And again, having them draw or color a picture about something they hear in the story helps them pay attention better. And then spend a minute or two listening to them talk about their picture. Practicing what you might call sit time at home not only teaches them the discipline of self-control and listening, but also helps prepare them for big church on Sundays.
This is so great, Ginger, and I love all of your tips. We didn't even try, though, to take our kids into big church until they were around age four. And I know not all churches, that's a possibility. But even then, we took into consideration their maturity rather than just their age. When the time did come for us to take our kids into church with us, we had them bring lots of quiet fidget toys, drawing supplies, and other non-technology ways to listen to the sermon while still moving their hands. Even quiet snacks can be, as long as they're not too messy, can be helpful. I'm a huge fan of fidget toys and drawing supplies because I've seen firsthand through homeschooling that a child can get way more out of what I'm reading or teaching if their hands are busy. So I'll have Heather put links to some of the things that were our favorites while our kids were really young, and even now they still use some of these things. And I do remember only allowing them to use these particular toys or art supplies when they're in church. That is extremely helpful as well.
Because then they're not bored with them. They're eager to play with something new.
And just a quick bonus tip for y'all. Matchbox cars are not the best fidget toys for church, believe it or not, especially if your church has a sloped floor with no carpet and you choose to sit at the very back. That was distracting that day for the entire congregation as Lightning Queen rolled 20 rows ahead of us until the person at the front grabbed it and handed it behind them. And it just got passed back and back and back and so on until I wanted to hide under the pew for the rest of the service. It was terrible.
Well, Katie, I don't want to scare you, but distractions can actually get more intense and embarrassing as they get older.
Oh, no.
A couple of years ago, Alex's phone alarm went off while the pastor was praying. So like the quietest moment during the service. And Alex had gone to the bathroom and left her phone beside me, and I could not figure out how to turn it off. And it was blaring. And what's worse was that the alarm was a reminder to take medication, and she had it set to play, I don't know the name of the song, some ridiculous song that went, "Drugs, give me drugs, give me drugs."
No, she did not.
Everybody in the church could hear the words of it. Talk about embarrassing. And I'm sure everyone was whispering, Isn't that the woman who has that parenting podcast?
You did not tell me that story. That is hysterical.
Yeah, it wasn't at the time, but it is now.
Moving on to our second question from Stephanie in New York. And she says this, I love the podcast and would love to hear an episode about encouraging older kids to take initiative. My oldest is 10 and I feel like he is at the age he could possibly clear off the table when he sees me finishing up dinner or help a young sibling reach something if I'm distracted, for example. But I feel like he is a long way from that. Do you have any tips to encourage him to take initiative?
Well, hi, Stephanie. I'm going to start out by saying I used to have the same problem, except it was with my husband. Until I realized it actually wasn't his problem, it was mine. I finally figured out that if I want Ronnie to set the table or help wash dishes after dinner, the best way for me to approach that is to just ask rather than slamming cabinets and throwing forks into the dishwasher a little louder than necessary. And Stephanie,
or breathing especially hard.
Yes, all the things. And Stephanie, I'm not saying you do that, but I've certainly been guilty of it. I share that to say that our children can't read our minds any more than our husbands can. I encourage you to consider that the things you feel your son should be taking the initiative to help with may not be on his radar at all, which is why communication is key. Asking for help or for children instructing them to help is better than expecting it and then stewing over the fact that we didn't get it voluntarily. Martha made that mistake in Luke chapter 10. I'm sure most of you guys are probably familiar with the story of Mary and Martha. Mary sat at Jesus's feet while Martha was running around busy making all the preparations for the guests. And Martha was stewing in frustration because she was having to do all the work herself and her sister was not lifting one finger to help. Now, what Martha wanted was assistance in making the preparations. But rather than simply asking her sister for help or even stating her need for help, she went whining to Jesus. She said, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Now, I realize that the moral of the story with Mary and Martha was not learn to ask for help, but there is a lesson that we can learn about that. It's less frustrating and usually more effective to simply state our need for help than to just expect it voluntarily. And I say state so that there's no room for question or confusion with kids. I can ask my husband, Ronnie, hey, would you mind doing the dishes tonight? Because he's an adult who's learned to make wise decisions.
And you want him to want to do the dishes, Ginger. That's what we want. I want him to want to do it.
We do. And so, and we want him to make the wise decisions. And husbands, let me just say this. If you're listening, it is indeed a wise decision to say yes if your wife asks you to help with the dishes. But I don't recommend asking young children to do chores. Asking a child, would you mind doing the dishes? Or would you like to set the table? That gives them the option to say no. It's less confusing to instruct, honey, while I'm cooking dinner, I need you to set the table. See, that's not a question to be considered, but a command to be obeyed. And just as a side note, make sure that you've taken time to show your child how to clear and set the table. As far as your son taking initiative to help a younger sibling when you're distracted, we do have to consider that some people are naturally observant and some are not. So in all fairness, it could be that your son is not aware that you're distracted. To you, it's obvious because it's your state of mind, but it may not be registering with him at all. And it may also not be registering when a younger sibling could use his help with certain tasks. So I encourage you to be patient with your son and just be willing to bring specific ways he can help with the siblings to his attention. The more you do that and the more he's instructed and required to help, the more habit forming it's going to become for him. The more we practice something, the more naturally it comes to us. And I'll say this, now that I've learned to ask Ronnie for help, he's become far more observant himself with the particular things that I like for him to help with. Now he takes initiative more times than not with those things, and I don't have to ask. My adult kids also take more initiative now, whereas when they were younger, not so much. During their growing up years, I had to give clear instructions and require them to listen and obey my instructions. But now as adults, when they come over to stay with us, they take the initiative to do things like cleaning the table and loading the dishwasher. So, Stephanie, there is light at the end of the tunnel. Just keep pointing your son in the right direction and just give it some time. You reap what you sow.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100% with this. And I also empathize with Stephanie's situation. I want to encourage you as well, Stephanie, that it will get worse before it gets better because he's headed into the teenage years. That 10-year-old boy is going to grow into a teenage boy and then become temporarily blind and deaf to his environment and the needs of others. And it's just one of the things that makes teenagers, especially teenage boys in particular, I think, so infuriating and endearing all at the same time. Mm-hmm. But I do want to seriously encourage you, as Ginger did, that this is not a character flaw on their part, and certainly not a design flaw on God's part. This is developmentally appropriate and something we as parents need to have lots of patience to endure. And honestly, one of the best things I did as my son was moving into his teenage years was to start listening to the Raising Boys and Girls podcast, because it really did open my eyes to so much of what was developmentally appropriate behavior versus what could be construed or misconstrued as sin. So I encourage you to read Are My Kids on Track as well, which was written by the three hosts of that podcast I just mentioned, and we'll put links in the show notes to these things. But that's a great book just to help us decipher what to expect from our kids at certain ages and mm-hmm. stages. And like Ginger, I want to caution you against becoming frustrated or, you know, at worst, even bitter toward your son for his lack of initiative, and instead communicate really clearly and kindly about the ways he can contribute to the needs of the family, because he does need to do that. But expecting him to anticipate your needs or anyone else's at this phase of life, I believe is unrealistic and probably a recipe for frustration for both of you. Mm-hmm. Ever wondered why traditional math curricula seem like a one-size-fits-all deal? Well, let's shake things up a bit and talk about CTC Math, a program that truly understands your child's unique learning needs. Imagine a math curriculum that adapts to their pace, making learning not just effective, but also enjoyable. No more tears. The interactive questions change in difficulty based on how your child is progressing, ensuring they're challenged just enough, not too hard, not too easy. It's like having a math tutor who knows exactly what they need when they need it. And as a parent, you'll love the detailed reports. You get to see their progress in real time so you can celebrate their victories and understand their challenges. It's really empowering. So if you're ready to give your child's math education a major boost, just visit ctcmath.com and sign up for a free trial. That's ctcmath.com. Okay, question number three comes from Mary Beth in Tennessee, and she says this. On the show, Katie has mentioned having a very shy child that struggled even saying hello or acknowledging others. I am in the same boat and at a complete loss on how to help my daughter. Any practical advice Katie could give on how she helped her child overcome this? Well, hi, Mary Beth. This was such a hard phase of life for us as parents because we had no clue. I mean, we felt the same way you did. We did not know how to deal with our daughter's perceived shyness. And I use that word. I have said on the show that she was shy, but I use the word perceived intentionally because we were careful with her, especially at that time, to not label her as shy, especially where she could hear us. Because I didn't want her to think there was some deficiency there or a character flaw. When others would point out her perceived shyness, I would try to maybe change the narrative a bit because people are really quick to point out what they believe character-wise our kids are like. I don't remember exactly what I would say to people then, but it could be helpful to say something like, well, you know, she's not really shy. She just likes to listen and observe first before she speaks. You know, I could take lessons from her patience before speaking, something like that. And it gives your daughter permission to be who she is right now, which might change as she matures and develops, while also letting her know that it's good and right to speak when she is spoken to. The tricky part here is that is the case in some situations. And Ginger, I don't remember if I've told this story on the podcast before, but Avery and I were in a gas station bathroom just inside the border from Georgia to Alabama. And we were driving back to Birmingham when we lived there. And a woman approached her in the bathroom. It was like 11 o'clock at night and was just, oh, aren't you the sweetest child I've ever seen? And was going on and on about her and kissed her.
What?
On the face. And she was drunk and I had no idea. And I was here trying to be really polite to this woman and nice. I mean, traumatized Avery. So I honestly think there is a point at which, you know, we are trying to teach them to have this awareness of strangers and what that looks like, but also, oh, you need to speak when spoken to. And it's a tricky thing to try to juggle those two. And I believe that Avery, especially as a very young toddler, interpreted that as people outside of my family are unsafe. And she just felt uncomfortable speaking to people, even if I was standing there with her. So, you know, Mary Beth, my recommendation for you is just to become a student of your daughter. Is she acting shy in all situations, like even with small groups of people or familiar groups of people, or only in new or uncomfortable environments? Is she exhibiting physiological signs of anxiety, like headaches or stomach aches when she's expected to be in a public or a social situation? Is her lack of communication triggered by something else? For instance, maybe she didn't get something she wanted, and this seems like her way of pouting or exerting some sort of control because she's angry. So these are all very different reasons that would call for very different responses from you as her parent. So it does require a whole lot of wisdom. And I think it's good and right to pray with your daughter about her lack of communication and even ask what might be most helpful to her. Is it okay with her or you for her to communicate using nonverbal means for this season of life? Maybe you're both okay with her nodding her head or shaking it to indicate yes or no. Maybe when someone does something kind for her that requires a response, she's better at showing gratitude in writing or through a picture rather than doing so verbally. So my encouragement here is to work with your daughter through this and not against her. Mm-hmm. I think one of the worst things to do, and something I know I did in my frustration, is to apologize to others when she refuses to respond. And especially because of the reasons I believe my daughter was silent in those moments. And I'll tell you about that in just a second. But, you know, my apologizing communicated to her that I was ashamed or embarrassed by her. And that is not at all the message I wanted to send. So, you know, that could worsen or even prolong something like social anxiety if she now attaches my perceived displeasure or anger to what was already a stressful situation for her. Just to be honest with you, Mary Beth, I don't think I handled Avery's situation as well as I would have liked. I often turned her lack of willingness to speak into an issue of disobedience. But looking back, now that she's 12, I realize that much of that was developmental. It was situational, and even some sensory overload and anxiety thrown in there as well that we have since gotten help for. So I mentioned this question to her and asked if she remembered going through that season of life. And she did say that she remembered being terrified to talk, especially to strangers. And that makes sense given her personality. But still, I'm grateful that she's been able to outgrow that and in some ways overcome her fear and engage with other people. Avery is absolutely one of the kindest and most thoughtful kids I know, despite all the shame I'm sure I heaped on her as a toddler for her social anxiety. But thankfully, God can redeem even our poorest parenting efforts.
Yes, he can, especially when there is humility on our parts to admit our mistakes and ask forgiveness. Mm. And I know from personal experience that God's grace comes down in moments like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Well, Mary Beth, your living in Tennessee reminds me that Katie and I will both be at the Teach Them Diligently conference in Pigeon Forge. Yeah, May 2nd through 4th. If any of our listeners are in or near that area, we would love to meet you in person. And if you go to teachthemdiligently.net and enter the code GINGER, you can get $20 off your ticket price. I also have some upcoming events in Florida, Missouri, Iowa, and Texas. I actually have two in Texas, one in Fort Worth and one in Houston. And they, too, are offering a discount on your ticket price when you use the code GINGER at checkout. And I can't remember their website. So we'll be sure to have Heather put links to all of these events, including information about discounts, in the show notes.
Now is the part of our show where we give a quick tip for parents. Today's quick tip is courtesy of Kayla from South Carolina, and she says this: I am a mom of four littles and listen to your podcast every Tuesday. Ginger, I know you love your onion goggles, but I am not a fan of having things on my face. I found out that if you simply wet a paper towel and put it down on the cutting board next to the onion while chopping, hold up, she's about to change my life, your eyes will not water. I don't know all the scientific reasoning exactly, but something about the onion sting is drawn to the closest moisture in the air. I was skeptical at first, but have used this trick several times with success. Thank you so much for all you do and for creating a space for biblical encouragement and guidance in biblical parenting.
Yep. So now I have to throw my onion goggles away. I was actually pretty fond of my
Well, you don't have goggles. To travel with them on vacation.
That's right. There you go. So actually, Heather did a little research after reading your quick tip, Kayla, and she said that, yes, you are correct. The wet paper towel catches the acid released by the onion before it reaches the air. Onions absorb sulfur when they're growing and convert that into an acidic compound that evaporates when the onion is cut. Our tear ducts react to protect our eyes as soon as that acid compound is released. It so happens that acid is drawn to water. So by placing a wet paper towel on the cutting board, it's drawn toward that instead of our eyes. Brilliant.
Wow.
I know. Kayla, I would have just taken your word for it, but this is yet just one more reason why we love Heather so much. She makes us so much smarter.
Heather and Kayla have made me smarter today. I love this so much. I cannot wait to tell this to my kids. They're going to love it. Mm-hmm. Well, listeners, if you have a quick tip for our show, we would love to hear from you. It can be any random tip about cooking, housekeeping, something you do with your kids, ideas for fun date nights with your spouse, anything at all. We would love to share your ideas on the podcast. Just go to gingerhubbard.com/quicktips to submit those. Listeners, as always, we love getting your questions and thinking through how to biblically shepherd the hearts of our children. If you have a question you'd like Ginger to answer, just go to gingerhubbard.com/askginger and submit it there. Well, thank you so much, Ginger, and thank you, listeners, for joining us today. If your church might be interested in hosting Ginger and me for a women's event or bringing Ginger in for a parenting conference, please fill out the contact form at gingerhubbard.com, and we'll get back to you with more information. Are you looking for fun and Christ-centered Easter gifts for your children or grandchildren, or maybe your nieces and nephews? Today, we're offering a discount on Ginger's children's books, co-authored with Al Roland. Just use the code PARENTING at checkout to get 10% off these three books. Sam and the Sticky Situation is a book about whining. Chloe and the Closet of Secrets is a book about lying. And Sean and his amazing shrinking sister is a book about teasing. But wait, listeners, we are also offering $10 off when you buy all three books. That's in addition to the 10% discount on your total order. So again, just go to gingerhubbard.com and use the code PARENTING at checkout. Thank you again for joining us today, listeners. We look forward to being with you again next week. Until then, may God bless you as you seek to reach the hearts of your children for the glory of God.